This week on Time with Attackers, we have Marcos Milanis, winner of GTA Pro Class Championship, winner of GTA Pro-Am Championship, and the new street all-wheel drive record holder at Superlap Battle. How are you going? How's it going, Marcos?
Good, thanks. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Yep.
So welcome. you had one hell of a season this year.
Yeah, it didn't pan out too bad when we sit back now and look at it. It came out pretty good.
It was pretty exciting to see how many how many records you crushed, and sometimes with almost no laps turned, and sometimes between between throwing up.
Yes, yeah, it was an interesting mix. We had to work for a few, and then a few I was really lucky and played my cards right, and just kind of got the good luck of the draw. But it's always the ones you got to work hard that you seem to cherish the most.
Yeah, definitely.
For sure.
Well, let's start with Superlap Battle. Tell us a little bit about that, how it went down, and maybe some of the escapades at Hoonigan on the way to the event.
Yes, scumbag became the word of the weekend. So for those that hadn't seen, or maybe hadn't seen as much, Sally, my girlfriend, had entered in the Hoonigan Drivers Wanted contest with Fiat that they did earlier in the year, and had developed a really good relationship with those guys there, Vinny and Hurt and the whole crew. And it ended up becoming, really good friends. And they're like, hey, why don't you guys stop by on the way to Superlap? We can hang out at the donut garage. We can film a quick build breakdown or do like a daily transmission episode with you guys. And we're like, all right, cool. Yeah, we'll check it out. We got extra time. We always try to plan a little bit extra time before Superlap, to make sure we get there in time and get unloaded and whatnot. So we're like, yeah, we'll go by and hang out. So get the cars off the trailer. We start filming the daily transmission episode. And I haven't been a big follower of the series, but I have become now since then, getting to know the guys. And they're like, yeah, let's do a space race. And I'm like, what on earth is a space race? So their compound is pretty sweet, right in the middle of Long Beach, right off the causeway there. And they're like, yeah, we'll race from here to the end of the container. I was like, all right, cool. Well, I've never used launch control before, and what's better than trying to look cool on the internet?
So the day before Superlap Battle.
Yeah.
The biggest event of my small racing career, I guess you could say. But I let the car warm up, dialed in the launch control and the access port, set it at like 6,500 RPM, and as you guys say up north, I sent it, and the first three went fine, and then we did the last take for the whole enchilada, and all of a sudden, for those that haven't seen the video, you should watch it, it's pretty good, and it's episode 154, 155, and the next thing I know, I'm hitting rev limiter with not going anywhere. I was like, oh, that's not good. So of course everything there is filmed, so a camera's in my face within seconds going, what happened? I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I think I blew the clutch up. So a couple of memes from Chris Bickford, to come out after the video later, showed the sheer look of terror on my face as I just
I noticed that, actually. I saw the first you were kind of smiling and laughing still, and then kind of panned back to you again when it was like
it set in. Yeah,
you're like, oh shit, I think I just broke this car.
I'm on the way to Superlap Battle and I just broke the car.
Yeah, I was like, great, well, this sucks, let me maybe it was just the clutch got too hot, whatever. So I let it cool down, drove it on the block, and wasn't really any much better. So, and the guys at Hoonigan were great. Vin and everybody's like, hey, we've got a lift here, we've got a whole bunch of tools, we'll stay here all night and fix it to make sure you get going. And I was like, all right, yeah, let me make some phone calls and see. And Sally's like, I'm gonna call Travis. I'm like, yeah, don't call Travis yet. I'm not ready to swallow my pride just quite yet. And then I came to the conclusion that I know we had a full toolbox, a whole group of guys up at Button Willow. The key would be to give everybody a heads up. So Vinny made the phone call to ACT up in Lancaster, was seeing if they could help us out. And luckily, they bailed us out big time. They hooked it up with a whole new six-puck kit and a light and flywheel. And luckily, Ken was there with us at the time. So he took the task of hauling ass from Long Beach at about 3:45
all the way. Oh, wow.
to meet an ACT employee at her house because it was after closing hours, and then to pick up the clutch and drive from Lancaster all the way to Bakersfield, going the back way through the Grapevine, while Sally and I were left to navigate rush hour traffic on the 5, which was a complete disaster, and get to the track. So I called Travis. Of course, he answers, and it's on speakerphone. I hear everybody in the background, "Yeah, Marcos, yeah." I'm like, "Hey, you got a minute?" And I hear this, "Oh, shit." I'm like, "Great, this is going great." And I was like, "Yeah, hey, man, like, I screwed up. Something's wrong with the car." He's like, "All right, just get it up here ASAP, and we'll tear into it." So we got up there, rolled the car off the trailer. Yep, it's, you know, something's wrong. And it was in the air no sooner than I got off the ground. If it weren't for, you know, Taylor, Travis, Jerome, everybody that was there, you know, Ken bringing the clutch, we would have been screwed. They had the transmission out, the old clutch out, new clutch in, transmission back in, and just a hair over 2 hours. And this was on our back with regular tools and whatnot in the garage there at Buttonwillow. And then upon completion of the clutch, we found that I also broke an axle shaft. So luckily, being a parts manager by day for a Subaru dealer, I was able to locate one at the Subaru dealer up in Bakersfield, and Cuban and Ken bailed me out big time. They got up at 6:30, drove into Bakersfield to get there right as the dealership opens to pick up the axle and bring it straight back. So wow. By the time that next morning I got out of driver's meeting, the axle was in, everything was torqued, car was on the ground and ready to go. So full team effort.
Wow, that's crazy.
I had no idea that your drive shaft broke.
Yeah, we found it right at the end. It was like, great, that didn't help the clutch situation at all. I mean, the clutch was roasted. That was that was a big mistake. Lesson learned, you know, save the launches for the drag strip. but the shaft broke so clean, it didn't flop around like when you would normally snap an axle shaft. It actually was just spinning on itself. That's how clean it broke.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah, I think I still have the outer joint somewhere in a box as a memoir.
So realistically, it was maybe more so the drive shaft that was causing you to not be able to move at Hoonigan than the clutch even.
Yeah, the disc was pretty fried. It was to the rivets. It needed to be replaced anyways, and then the flywheel was extremely hot spotted. So just a bad combination of the two led to the failures.
Maybe it was actually a blessing in disguise that it happened. Maybe the clutch was pooched anyways.
Yeah, you know what? It's crazy because we took it out that next morning just to, you know, shake it down and see, and I was shocked. Normally, you know, light and flywheels and Subarus aren't really a good combo, but it was a risk I was willing to take, and it paid off. I mean, the car shifted better. You know, it didn't have the shutter it had before. So, like you said, definitely a blessing in disguise.
And then it ended up working out in the end at SLB. So tell us a little bit about
that. Yeah, it was. So with the year's successes, the record we set at Big Willow was done in 2 laps. The record at ACS Roval was 1 lap. So I set the bar high for myself, and I definitely overestimated the pain that Buttonwillow can be and how it'll bite you if you're not prepared. It took me majority of the first day to get into the low 50s, and Johnny Hernandez, him and I have been, you know, neck and neck all year long, and he actually went quicker than me on the first day, and I knew I had my work cut out for me because, you know, he's been very capable, been right on my heels the whole year. But luckily, Jeff Westfall, really good buddy of ours, we've known him for quite a long time, he's like, "Hey, you know, let's look at your video real quick. Let's pull your data off your AimSport dash. We'll take a look and see what you got." And we found some areas I was giving up a lot of time. And he's like, "Hey, you know, go out this next session, you know, Saturday morning, work on these 2 or 3 things in the first session, see if it makes a benefit, and then go from there." And luckily, I was able to do, I think out of about the 10 or 11 things we picked up, I was able to do all of them but 1 or 2. And it ended up being that 49.3 that we needed to break Cody Miles' record from last year. So it worked out really good. I was pretty shocked, and that lap felt great. Definitely looking forward to going back again, now knowing what I know with the lap, to see what I can do next year.
That'll be really exciting for sure. I know that you talked about the lap after that lap. You said that, you know, there was, you had found even more time out there. So it'll be exciting to see how low you can go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't pulled the data yet from that very final session where we literally hung it all out. Went for broke. We had nothing left to lose at that point. I actually ultimately toasted the motor. I think we killed the head gaskets. The car was pushing coolant really bad that last session. And I also burned the brakes down, as seen in the video, the Hoonigan video as well, the field trip video that came out after that. But yeah, the lap that could have been, I guess is what we're going to call it, was it was pretty much perfect up until sunset. And I was trapping low 140s coming out of the S's into sunset. Tried to brake about a car deeper, like what Jeff and I had talked about earlier, and ultimately just pushed it too wide, car understeered. I stayed in it, was pointed at the pit wall for what seemed like an eternity, and just kept my foot in it, caught it, got back on the straight, lifted, and still did a low 50, which everybody was screaming at me that I should have stayed in it to see what we would have done. But yeah, definitely the lap it could have been. I have yet to pull the data. I don't know if I want to yet, because I'm pretty sure I'd be pretty mad at myself.
That's some that's some impressive speed going into sunset, because
140 is pretty fast.
That's I haven't pulled much of my data yet from the event, because obviously, but I know last year the fastest, I think Chris and I were both around the 137 mark.
Yeah.
So for you to be going in the 140s, that's extremely impressive.
Yeah.
I mean you know Chris knows as well as me that those Generation 2 GTX turbos, man, it's something else. That car just wants to make power all
the way.
Yeah,
they're pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's very impressive. It's very impressive to see what you did, and it's always exciting to know what could have been, and it keeps us motivated for the next season.
Yeah, definitely.
So one question that that I had, I'd like to know a little bit more about how you actually got into the sport of time attack.
Okay, well, for me, it was actually kind of interesting. So back in 2008, 2009, what was called Club Racing Arizona, which is now ultimately NASA Arizona, which is like one of our local big HPDE and time trial groups that's here in Phoenix, they ran an article in the local newspaper saying, hey, you know, you can bring your car out to the track, we'll give you a helmet, we'll teach you how to drive it. And my mom at the time had cut out that article for me and was like, hey, you know, you should look into doing this. I think you'd really enjoy it. Quick backstory, on my mom's side of the family, everybody's a gearhead. You know, my mom worked for Steve Saleen as his travel agent back in the late 70s, early 80s. My grandpa used to race hot rods with Vic Edelbrock back in the day. Both my uncles raced circle dirt track. One of them moved to New Zealand for a couple years and raced it down there. So definitely gearheads on my mom's side. But ultimately, she passed away in 2008 from breast cancer. She never really got to see in person me race, but obviously now she's got the best seat in the house for it. But her cutting out that article was kind of what drove me into NASA, getting started with NASA and getting the bug that way. Ended up working my way through the HPDE series up to HPDE 3 and 4, which is what classifies you for our local time attack, which is the UMS tuning time attack series, who Tony Zirk has put on for, goodness, what seems like maybe 8-9 years now. And that's kind of what got the bug bitten. I had, you know, tons of magazines with Super Street and Turbo and Modified Mag and Sport Compact Car that had always covered Super Lab and Time Attack as a whole. So it was kind of cool to get my feet wet locally, you know, without spending the big money, traveling around to all these places and racing. And the next thing I know, you know, I'm out there with my 05 Impreza RS, making a whopping 150 horsepower, and was out there running in there in the highest class, which was Time Attack A Group. It was all based off of power to weight, so the car wasn't classed really well based off the fact that it didn't make a whole lot of power. But it was all wheel drive and it was fun. You know, good place to get started. And I met I actually met Taylor, who I lived with for a couple years in Goodyear. I met him through UTI, and he had introduced me to Travis at Snail. Before I even knew who Snail Performance was. And the next thing I know, they were expecting their first child, and his wife Megan was looking to sell her 06 WRX, single owner car. Travis had done all the work on it. it was kind of a no-brainer to buy it. Like, I've been looking to add more power and figured, hey, this has got to be the best way to do it. So I bought that WRX, and the rest has pretty much been history now. We've been competing with Global Time Attack as a whole with Snail Performance since its inception in 2011. And then I got my feet wet in 2012, took a little bit of a hiatus to rebuild the car and stance the nation with my RF, and got back in it last year.
That's amazing, the stories about how, involvement with Edelbrock and Saline and stuff like that. I had no idea. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I mean, it definitely got the bug early. I mean, we used to mess around on ATC three-wheelers at my grandma's house, outside. It's like all the time. And we were definitely screwing off, ripping them around up and down the forest out there. It was a ton of fun.
That's wild. Well, that's really interesting kind of how you got your story. I'm very sorry to hear about your mom, but it's pretty amazing that she encouraged you. There's not too many moms that are like, hey, you should go track your car. It's pretty amazing.
It was definitely tough. I was only 19 at the time, but she was a big supporter of it back then, and I guarantee you she still is, watching up top. But that's the whole reason the car is pink. Quick backstory on the car, that's why the license plate's the Susan G. Komen for breast cancer awareness and whatnot. That's why we've had the car pink for that. That's why people always ask, like, when we haul across to Atlanta, like, oh, the pink one's your girlfriend's, huh? I'm like, no, it's mine. And then I tell them, everybody loves it, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, actually, I never knew that. That's actually a great story. I love that.
I'm sure it keeps you motivated, to keep on doing it and going faster and everything like that, knowing that she was so for it. It kind of, I'm sure it's a good feeling.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
So, we always knew you were quick, and you always did well at events and stuff like that. But this year, man, it seemed to be, you really seemed to be, as you say, you've been really sending it this year.
Yeah, yeah. That's a little bit of an understatement. You've definitely been
so
amazing.
Biggest change with you and biggest change with the car that's caused you to be able to set some blistering fast laps this season?
I think the biggest thing for me was just getting behind the wheel again. From taking 3 years off, you kind of get rusty. And I took Sally's old, when she had a 2015 WRX at the time, and I took that to Superlap in, goodness, that must have been 15, I think it was.
Yep.
Yeah,
it was. Yeah, we were there that season.
Yeah, I think that's actually how I met you guys, is I, we rented out two garages, but you guys needed one, so I just let you have it, so.
That's right.
Thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
we ended up using it a lot.
Yeah.
Well, they definitely come in handy, but 2015, I took her WRX out and ran enthusiast double drive to kind of make sure I still wanted to get back into doing this, and then 2016, we finished the car the first half of the year, and then, oddly enough, we made the debut in Road Atlanta, quite far from Phoenix, on a completely untested and unshaken down car. And we kind of had a decent feeler year to get us ready for this year. And I think the biggest thing for me mentally was just, seeing the bar set by Cody last year and seeing what he was able to do, and knowing that I'm being confident, not overly confident, but knowing, I'm pretty sure that I can do that with this car. And I was really bummed out to see him not end up being in street class again. It would have been really fun to battle it out with him this year. But there were some people saying some comments like, there's no competition in street class. And I kind of took that to heart, because I was ready to, really give it a good shot this year. I think that was the biggest drive for me mentally. And then having the success early on at Boost Fest in February at Streets of Willow, I actually had no idea I had broken the record till like halfway through the day. And I was like, interesting. That was, that felt really good. All right, cool. Like, let's see if we can keep riding this momentum for it. And next thing you know, we were going back to Button Willow in, what was it, March or April, and ultimately toasted the motor there. Had a lot of work in front of us for Road Atlanta, and ended up doing well there. But I think the biggest change for the car had just been the data on the data side of it. Instead of just going out and turning laps, being able to log, pressures, how the car felt. Jan from Man Engineering has been really instrumental in helping us get the suspension set up on the car. And then Travis and Taylor with any issues, you know, with the tune or mapping, finding adjustments and tweaks. And then Travis has been pulling the data off my AimSport dash for the whole year. So he's been able to yell at me, hey, quit breaking or get on the gas. Like, you know, it's been nice to have that extra little bit of coaching and the ability to really see where we're leaving time on the table. That's why, you know, people complain, oh, an aim dash in a street car? Right, that's a street car. But, you know, one, there's no rule against it. And two, who doesn't want to go faster? Like, yeah. The AIM products are great. Like, the race pack stuff you have is awesome because you can see what's going on with the car and you can see where you're leaving time on the table.
Well, and it's so important. I mean, we've said this in other episodes. I mean, with Time Attack cars, you know, we don't always get to go out there for full 20, 30-minute sessions. You know, we might be lucky if we're getting 4 or 5 laps.
Yes.
And so to be able to do those 4 or 5 laps and then come in and analyze, look at video, look at data, and then kind of plan out what you're going to do in the next session, it makes the world of difference. It really does.
I agree 100% with that, because then it gives you an idea or a goal of what you need to do or something you need to do differently. Like, I encourage people, you know, buy that AIM Solo, you know, use Harry's lap time or use something so you can see, you know, that way you're not just out there hot lapping your car. Sally was pretty guilty of this for a while. She would turn lap after lap after lap after lap. And it's like, I mean, that's good fun and all, but when you're out there to really try to set a good time and keep the car happy, like, you gotta be focused and do it in small steps.
Yep.
Yeah. I know for myself, any event that we went to this year that the car was unreliable, but, you know, the events where we were able to consistently go out and the car was similar, you know, from session to session, looking back at that data, it was a huge, huge difference versus, you know, the events where we definitely, you know, we didn't have enough as many sessions to kind of, you know, have something to look back at. It's much more of a struggle.
Yeah. Plus it's kind of puts that magnifying glass on your driving, right? There's lots of times where you think you feel something in the car or you think you're pushing as hard as you can. And then you go back and you look at the data, and especially if you can compare against someone else, you know, who has, you know, a similar car, or you can, you know, talk to someone like Jeff or someone like that and get their opinion. And they're just like, well, no, you're leaving time here and there. And it's really, you know, eye opening in my opinion. I think it's one of the best tools anybody can add to a Time Attack car. If you want to go fast, you got to have that data.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, like, you know, all three of us, pretty much everybody in the series except for Jeff and Scott Speed this year, we're all amateurs. Like, we don't do this daily. We make mistakes all the time. Like, you know, I blew a corner. We've all blown corners. We all make boneheaded moves. Like, you know, anything that we can see, like you said, to measure our successes, to measure what we're doing is really big and going faster.
Yeah, 100%. Agreed.
I know the first event that I was, you know, we were really, the first event that we had the race back dash in the car this year was Mid-Ohio. Mm-hmm. And the car was really, really good at Mid-Ohio. I ran every session, the whole 2-day event. And I ran a 27.9, a 127.9 at Mid-Ohio, like second session. And I felt really good about that lap. I was like, man, I don't think I'm going to find that much more time. And, you know, I did another session, found a couple of tenths, I kept on looking back at the data and knew that even though I was finding some time in some spots, I was still leaving, you know, I wasn't putting the whole lap together, but I kept on, you know, learning stuff in each corner. And, you know, it all came together the last session of the last day. And we ended up finding like 1.8 seconds over that lap that I thought was a pretty good lap.
Yeah.
And that's huge when in this little hobby of ours, we're literally chasing tenths and hundreds all the time.
Yep.
Definitely. So, yeah, knowledge is power, definitely, in the sport. That's for sure.
100%. So, why don't you tell us a little bit about Snell Performance?
I know you kind of broached on that a little bit already, but, you know, they're so integral in yours and Sally's program, and they've been running, you know, with GTA for so long. We'd like to learn a little bit more about those guys.
Yeah, so it actually started, it was just Travis and a couple guys in Phoenix, and this was back in what I call the forum days, which days I still absolutely love. I came from forums, so that's how I found my info. But this was back in, like, let's see, the, you know, mid 2007, 8, 9. Travis had a knack for working on Subarus when he was not, you know, working on F-16s at Luke Air Force Base, and he had been doing a bunch of work out of his garage in his house, and he actually got started with cars. He had a turbo Tiburon when he lived in Texas, oddly enough, and ended up buying a Bug Eye. Almost bought an Evo, but they sold it before he could get there, so he ended up buying the Bug Eye. Thank goodness for that, because I don't know where we'd be now if we didn't have Subarus.
You'd probably have an Evo 8.
Maybe not, but we'll see. He started doing some tuning and whatnot, was doing road tunes and whatnot, doing work out of his house, and I had linked up with them in 2009, Taylor, for actually the 1 year after my mom's passing, had gave me cash to come out to SubiFest when it was at Willow Springs, to come check it out, hang out with the crew and see what it was all about. And Travis was out there with his Bug Eye laying times down, and I was like, wow, this is cool. And you know, next thing you know, we're in the parking lot with my RS pulling the file off of it to see if he can tune it. And got back to Phoenix, got the car tuned by him. It made, I think, 160 horsepower and 160 pound-feet of torque, which at the time was pretty high for a Subaru RS naturally aspirated. And started doing track days with them, and they ended up working so much on the Subaru stuff and tuning that they partnered up with a couple shops in Phoenix to have a dyno on hand to do some tuning there. And then one thing led to another, and Taylor's on his own with his own shop, and Travis is up in Northern California tuning for M45 Automotive, and Taylor has a full-on production here in Phoenix. Couple lifts in the back that one of our old Subaru techs from back in the day works out of, and then Taylor does part sales and tuning on the dyno here, and then Travis does a lot of the tuning and stuff in NorCal, and then we also both, Taylor and Travis, have been really big this year with the race support for Sally and I. So it's been good. It started off as a really small little deal, and it's kind of blossomed into something pretty big.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's impressive to, you know, to have them supporting you guys like they do, and you know, seeing them come out to Road Atlanta and everything like that. It's not a small deal for them to be traveling all over. So it's very impressive, and you know, we love to see that. It takes support like that to keep everyone going, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, even like last year, real quick, I had some issues. The car wasn't happy on the practice day we did last year, and Taylor and Travis were on the plane on the same flight with Wi-Fi and TeamViewer, and were remotely tuning the car for me. Right, the 85 side of Road Atlanta, and not the smartest thing in the world, but you got to do a road tune pull. So loaded up fourth gear, you know, took it all the way to $7,000, about $130, $140, and backed out of it.
That's so cool.
So it was like a close course, but we're able to, you know, change the map with them being in the plane and us being on the ground. Like, it's stuff like that. Like you said, having that team behind you, oh, makes a world of a difference.
It's such a huge part of Time Attack, man. You got to have those guys in your corner helping you, because I mean, you know, these cars are temperamental at best. Yes. And you know, we're traveling such far distances to get to a lot of these events. It's terrible if you get, you know, if you drive all the way to a place like Atlanta and you don't get to run because of something small like that. I mean, it's big to a lot of people, but I mean, I'm sure it's, you know, for those guys to do a retune is probably something that they're, you know, they're very familiar with, and it's not a big deal to them. That makes a difference between you actually getting to run and you packing up and going home, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, it is, and that's a long tow home.
Oh yeah. especially when you haven't gotten to run, it's even worse at that point.
Yeah, definitely.
We have a friend that we won't mention because it was a crappy experience for him, but a friend that towed all the way out to Gingerman this summer for an event, and was having ECU issues when he got there. Never fired the car.
No.
Came back, you know, towed 7 hours there, 7 hours back. Couldn't get the car fired.
Couldn't even get off the trailer.
No. Yeah. So that's a super, you know, it's just sad. It's just, you know, frustrating for everyone involved. And, you know, I felt really bad for him.
Yeah, I felt terrible.
I know that there would have been, there would have been lots of, you know, examples of that happening to me if we didn't have Eric in our life. That's for sure.
For sure.
Oh yeah.
So you've been working with Ken Swen, KSR, and Cuban and those guys. That's kind of a new thing for you guys, that they've been helping out a bit more. So how did you become friends with them? How did you start working more with them and having them help you out at the track?
So I had actually met Ken back in 2012. We both competed in the final installment of the modified streetcar shootout series, which was in our backyard in Phoenix. And Ken was... he had Big Red back in a way, way more simpler time. Like, way simpler time.
Well, it was still together, you mean, right?
What's left of it. But, no, we ended up linking up there, became good buddies, and then I ran with him at GTA in 2013 at Chuckwalla, which was, like, probably the hottest event GTA's ever ran. Also, the event I met Sally. And Ken was out there as well. We were dying in the heat. Cuban was there. I think Kiet was there too. And we all, you know, we just kind of became good buddies, you know, talking smack back and forth on the internet all the time, like we all do best. Because what's Time Attack without shit talk? It's not. You gotta have it. But no, we ended up just linking up really good. And Ken had some really good ideas about what we can do to add a splitter to the car. And, you know, all three of those guys, Ken, Cuban, and Kiet, have kind of been like my JDM influence, I guess you could say. Because, you know, being on the West Coast, everything you see in Japan translates over, you know, you see it on our coat. You know, you see it in California all the time. You hear it from all the people on the East Coast. I've never seen so many Voltex wings in my life out here. I've never seen so many TE-37s in my life out here. You know, it's a whole different world with Southern California Time Attack stuff. And they've been really kind of influencing me and pushing me to do some different stuff. And Ken's really good at fabricating. He designed the chassis mount splitter for the car that's still on it to this day, the same one we've ran for the last year and a half. He's, you know, got one on Sally's car too. Plenty of crazy ideas. Ken loves his dimple dye, so my, you know, there's some dimple dye stuff on the car, not a whole lot because we're still street class. And I know he's chomping at the bit to take the hole saw and the dimple dye tool all over the car. But it's been, you know, it's been good. Those guys have really helped push me and have, you know, given me a lot of ideas, stuff we can take away, you know, to make the car better, refine myself, refine the car. And, I mean, it seems like we're, you know, in California with them almost every other month, which is always a blast with those guys.
It looks like it always looks like fun and always looks like good eating as well. Yeah, I always see you guys posting pictures of all the places you're eating. I'm like, man, I need to get some of that food. Oh, yeah.
If you come down to Phoenix in March, we will take you on the tour, my friend.
I can't wait for the tour. It's like I don't know what I'm looking forward to more, the Bondurant thing or the food tour.
Yeah.
Bondurant's fun, but eating food and drinking beer is a lot more fun.
And 75 degrees in March. That sounds like awesome. The trifecta right there.
Oh yeah. I don't think. Well, we might get some rain then, but it's going to be perfect at that time.
Oh man, I'm too excited. So, plans for 2018 and beyond. Are you going limited? Are you plans to ever go limited? Changes for next year. Tell us all about it.
So 18 should be fun. We made some good partnerships at PRI. One of them was actually thanks to you, Mr. Houghton.
No problem.
Linked up with Sally and I both linked up with Brad of Stop Tech, and we're going to be developing a kit similar to like what you did on the Integra, like a Time Attack specific kit for the Subaru chassis. So I'm really excited for that. It'll be nice to be able to punish the car under braking all year long and have it not skip a beat. I mean, your results speak for themselves. I mean, you've dealt with them for the last year or so. I mean, you absolutely love them.
I can't say enough good things. I mean, you know, the car spent 24 or 25 days at the track this year. Ooh. Same rotor, same calipers, you know, never really never really put much thought into it. You know, we monitored the rotors and made sure that there wasn't any cracks or anything like that, and never had anything to worry about. We logged more than one time this year 2.5 G's under braking. So
wow,
what else can you ask for with a brake kit, you know, that can do that kind of braking G's, and you know, you don't have to do any maintenance or anything to it. You just like leave it alone.
Yeah, it'll be cool. I'm looking forward to basically taking them for granted next season. That's going to be really nice. But yeah, we've got some good stuff coming for 18. I know for myself, there's more time pretty much everywhere, and I am not leaving street class anytime soon. So there's some people in Limited that were like, don't come to Limited, please. We're not ready. we've got a lot of unfinished business, especially with Road Atlanta, since I came up a little short, 6/10 short, and post-event inspection, we found a boost leak, which probably cost us that little bit of extra speed on the back straight.
I would think that any sort of boost leak would be at least that much. That straight is just never ending.
Yep.
Yeah, I think the goal is going to be a 28 or a 29, which would be unheard of for a street car or street class car at Road Atlanta. So I'd like to. That's kind of the goal with what we're going with for next year. And we've got more time in it pretty much everywhere else. I know Willow Springs, I only turned 2 laps in competition there this year. I know there's more time in it there. That was the event I was sick. I was actually, I think I got food poisoning the night before and was seen puking literally 2 minutes before I got in the car. So I apologize there on grid that saw me yak. But I ended up feeling good enough to go crush it really quick and then park it for the rest of the day. But it'll be good. We've got a lot going for next year, a lot more room to improve on. We're going to focus on the mechanical side of things this year to try to really optimize the setup with handling and whatnot. We're going to hopefully work on some differential stuff and just get more comfortable with the car, which is a crazy thought considering how quick the car was this year, that we can even go faster next year. It should be really good. I'm excited for it.
Any aero changes planned? I know talking to Mike from Professional Awesome last week and just looking at the rule book myself kind of over the years, it seems like, you know, on the outside looking in, that it's pretty limited in street. But then when you really see some of the rules, like, okay, yes, you can only have a 5-inch splitter, but it doesn't say, you know, what's going on underneath the splitter. It doesn't say anything about, you know, what you're allowed for splitter diffusers and stuff like that. I feel like there could be, you know, a lot to be gained still as well. And, you know, at a track like Road Atlanta, some seriously high-speed corners there.
Yeah,
definitely. That was one thing we were looking at, too. The aero's pretty simple. We just have the Alumilite splitter within street class spec at 5 inches. And we have the Cognition chassis-mounted wing, which has the raked mounts that sit a little bit more rearward. And that wing is completely trimmed out at 0 degrees angle of attack. So we actually have a lot more we could really do with the car aerodynamically. But I feel like there's more for us to be gained on the mechanical side of it with suspension and differentials. The car felt pretty planted all year. I was a little squirrely in Riverside this year at Superlap. Underpower. I had a really cool tank slapper that was on the live stream the first day. And then in the final session on the second day, I went completely sideways in the dirt, kind of like what you did 2 years ago, just not as dramatic.
That was pretty dramatic when I did that. That was like, frightening.
Oh yeah, I think the mechanical side of it will be bigger for us to gain than the aero. It's like you said, it's tough with the street class rules. The biggest thing being not being able to connect everything underneath and have like a really good functioning floor. But we've got some tricks up our sleeve. We're going to try a couple different things here and there just to play around with it and see. But for the most part, it'll be staying the same. Visually, the car is going to go under the knife. I've got some cool tricks up my sleeve for that. So I don't want to say a whole lot now, but I'm looking forward to unveiling that next year.
I heard a little birdie told me that it might look a little bit different, but I won't say anything for now. It sounds exciting, and yes. We'll definitely keep it under wraps because that's it's always neat to see any changes visually.
Sure. Yeah, for sure.
Well, that's super exciting. It's I'm really excited to hear, you know, see and hear more about the changes.
On a 28, you know, planning for a 28 or 29 in street at Atlanta is I'm excited to see that. I think that'll be like you said, it'll be game changing if you're able to accomplish that goal.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, people, street class seemed to be hotly contested when I guess it was all my own fault for creating that rule thread on the Facebook. Completely haywire, just exactly like I thought it would. But, you know, street seemed to have a lot of focus because the times we were laying down this year at the 8.6 event at Auto Club Infield, I was the fastest overall out of every single car, GTRs on slick. I beat everybody, which for a street class car, that's completely unheard of. Granted, it is a small track, so it's, you know, take it with a grain of salt. But it, you know, a lot of people started questioning, oh well, street class too fast, what do we need to ban, whatever. I mean, when you look at it in any class, and it had been discussed in that thread a lot, nobody's really built to the T of the rules. Very few teams. You know, when we look at the benchmark, which is Australia, I mean, we all yearn to be there. The amount of money they spend on billet parts, on aero design, not even the production, just the design, you know, the everything for that one event, it's unreal. It kind of makes us all look at our builds like, man, we've really got to turn the wick up, and we can maximize a lot more places. I think you guys can both agree with me on that too.
I'm a firm believer in that. I mean, I commented quite a bit in that thread, and I mean, that was the one thing that I kind of kept reiterating is, you know, people aren't building the cars that they should be for the classes that they're running in. And then, you know, we have a lot of people who are complaining about, you know, not being able to compete. But at the same time, I mean, if you're not optimizing for the rule book, it's really difficult, right?
The last two cars I can really think of that were probably really built for the rule book was Pro Awesome in Limited in 14 and 15.
Yeah.
Or, yeah. Yeah, 14 and 15.
14 and 15,
yep.
And then, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but Craig Peyron or Peyron or whatever. When he was in Enthusiast or whatever, right? He was an Enthusiast. That was a crazy car for Enthusiasts.
Yeah, 55 at Buttonwillow was an E-Class car. That's nuts.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That was the first year we came to Superlap Battle, and I remember seeing this E-Class car sitting there on stands the night before Superlap Battle, all the tires off and in the trailer, and I'm thinking, man, I think that car might have had, wasn't there, didn't have subframes or something like that. That's what they always talk about.
Yeah, there was some post-event drama with the rule book for that, but I mean, nonetheless, like, Craig's a really good shoe. I've heard rumors that he's coming back out. We'll see.
Oh, wow.
But that was definitely a special car.
Yeah, I was amazed. I'm like, we are not. I'm in Limited, and my car sat on its tires last night. He's in Enthusiast, and his tires are in the trailer. I'm for sure doing something wrong here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like you said, we all kind of got to take a step back and look at what we're doing, and hey, like, what can we do differently? You know, and I appreciate the fact that Global hasn't dramatically changed the rules in the last year or two, which is nice because that allows you to really, you know, get a good grip on what you need to do, and obviously, you know, throughout the year test to see what can be gained, what can't be. You know, it's tough when the rule books are constantly changing, you know, either for the better or for worse. You know, obviously everybody's going to have a different opinion on it, but it's nice to have a good set of rules that hasn't changed. That way you can get people excited about wanting to be a part of this. I mean, I've noticed, I think you guys have too, in the last couple years, like, Time Attack as a whole has become a lot more popular. There's a lot more interest in it. You know, you're seeing, granted, you know, Facebook groups, in my opinion, aren't the best place to ask for ask input on and questions. You see that a lot. Somebody asks a question, you need to buy billet uprights. It's like, I've never been on a track day. You know, I've never done a track day before. I'm not, you know, I'm new to Time Attack. Why do I need billet uprights? Oh, well, you need it.
Yeah.
This is where I miss forums.
Yeah, and going back to that, like, that's why I still think forums are the key. I mean, there's good information out there, but people get so overwhelmed in spending all of this money on these cars before they even lay a wheel, you know, on the track or even turn a lap time. It's like, you forget the most important thing, the nut behind the wheel. You know, we need to be out there being comfortable first before you go spend $70,000 X amount of money on an unlimited class car because that's what you want to build. Like, I think, you know, Chris, you and I had this discussion the other day. Somebody wanted to go full on and unlimited. It's like, well, hold on, man. Like,
yep.
That's cool. You want to get started, but you should probably get your feet wet first before you go, you know, spend your life savings on a car.
Yeah, you got to walk before you run, and I think a lot of people, I mean, I'll be honest, I was that guy. I went the wrong way about it, and I, you know, I jumped in, and the first thing I did was start adding more power to my car before I learned anything about suspension or about driving, and it took me a long time to undo the damage that I did by doing that, right?
Chris started with Time Attack before I did, and then I showed up with an almost stock type bar and started laying a beating to him. And he was like, whoa, 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 whoa.
What's going on here?
What direction do we need to go here? But I mean, you think of it, same with your car, right, Marcos? And your previous car, you started out with a slow car and you got your feet wet and you built on it from there. I get people, you know, you were just saying about that. I get people message me all the time. They say, you know, I'm trying to build a car like yours. And I love that. I think it's amazing that people, you know, want to use my car and kind of try to build something like it. But it's like, man, I turned hundreds of laps with this car almost completely stock. Like hundreds and hundreds. I would lap full sessions every session.
Yep.
You know, to try to come out and just build an unlimited class with, you know, not that much building experience and not that much driving experience, like, you're not, it's not going to be sustainable.
No.
Yeah, and I'm in the same boat, you know, both Sally and myself. Like, I love helping people. You know, we get messages quite a bit. Hey, you know, we saw you on the Hoonigan video, or we saw your guys' video from Superlap. We followed you on Instagram. Like, what can we do to get started? And I usually tell them, like, start small, because when you look at the big picture, you know, there's a lot that goes into it, not just the car. It's having the consumables, you know, the fuel, you know, spare parts, having the truck, having the trailer, having the time off to be able to drive, you know, 2,300 miles across country, you know, having the team behind you. I mean, it's no serious undertaking, even for us at the street class level, which is why it's great that Global has, you know, the enthusiast class, so you can get started. You know, get your feet wet, see if this is something that you really want to do before you, you know, go for broke like the rest of us are.
Because you can spend a lot of money even enthusiasts if you want to.
100%.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, enthusiast class, I think, is, you know, one of those classes that there's a lot of untapped potential, I guess you could say, like in the rules. Like, very few cars are built to the T. But, you know, to really build an enthusiast class car, there's not a whole lot to that. That's like, you know, you really should be focusing for that, something like getting ready to make that jump to street, and then 100%. You really build to a set of rules.
Yep. No, I agree.
Well, Marcos, it's been absolutely fantastic having you on the show. Is there any sponsors you'd like to say thank you to before we finish this up?
Yeah, I mean, it was, like I said, it was a team effort on the, you know, just with the crew this year, with, you know, Snail Performance and the KSR and the Bobby Lane Racing guys. But, you know, without the fine folks at Cobb Tuning, you know, CSF Radiators, Jay at Element Powder Coats, JJ and the whole crew at IAG, seriously, like, that was, I think, that was other one of the big breaking points for us, was getting linked up with those guys. Top team, like, great, great group of people to work with. Jay at Ignite Racing Fuel, that stuff is the best, seriously the best thing around. For us, you know, to compete at this level we have, having consistency is key, and that fuel seriously does it. Jan and the whole group at Man Engineering, Sean and the crew at Piper Cross, Rich at Aria Works, the guys at Super Pro, Brett and the team, Tim and everybody at Honeywell Garrett, and of course Marty and Tess at TurboSmart. Like, all these people, I feel honored to work with some of the best in this industry. And I'm very, very proud to be able to give them the results that they were looking for.
Well, that's fantastic. A great support program, you know, a great group of people supporting you, and a great guy, and some fast lap times because of it all.
Yeah, thank you. If you guys want to follow along, Instagram is at SnailPerformanceMarcos. I have a Twitter. I don't use it a whole lot. I don't even know what my handle is, to be honest with you. Oh, yeah. It's at Marcos_Milonis, and then if you guys follow along on Facebook with Snail Performance and Snail Performance AZ, you can see all of our shenanigans leading up to 2018, and we're going to try to make that the best year yet.
It's awesome. Well, I'd like to thank you for being on the show, and hopefully we'll be able to have you on again in 2018 to talk about all of your success in that season.
Definitely. I appreciate you guys having me on. I wish I could share the weather with you, because I know, hang on, let me rub it in your face. It's 59 right now.
It's not 59 here.
Yeah, definitely not 59. All right, thanks, Marcos.
On, and hopefully we can do this again.
Sounds good. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
If you like this podcast, please subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. Thanks for listening, and we hope you tune in again next week.